From Muncie, New York, Rabbi Yanky and Uri Horowitz. Rabbi Yanky is the founding dean of Yeshiva Darkei Noam. He's also the director of Project Yes. And his Eishes Chayil is, I guess, his right hand in all of the above. It's wonderful to see you.
Nice to be here.
It's good to be here.
Well, let me ask you, in your eyes, what would make a parent a good mechanech?
What would make?
A parent a good mechanech. Define a good mechanech.
Someone who teaches by example.
Okay.
Someone who teaches in a Darkei Noam way, in a way that's and who plays the long game, really. It's really about playing the long game. I think a mechanech ultimately is someone who can...
shows compassion.
Go ahead. No. I always say, if you ever want to know what I'm going to think in 2 weeks, ask Udi.
Okay.
So I think the long game, in other words, rather what Rav Elba speaks about all the time, it's Zriya and Binyan, planting and building, where building is an inorganic type of growth, and planting is you're playing the long game. It takes longer, but once you finish, it grows by itself. So that's how I see it.
What's an example of a long game versus a short game?
Michael? You'll correct me if I did. So the long game, I would say, is where you explain things and you allow children to ask you questions, and whatever they do in a positive way is more organic. It comes because this is what they want to do, rather than you just telling them what to do, which we know doesn't last beyond a certain point. Ultimately, they're going to make their own decisions, and you hope that you've left them with the right messages, that the decisions they make are correct, and enriches their life. Rather than, it's really the same thing as the short. That's the long game. The long game is
home is your laboratory. Try test things out here.
There is inspiring and getting them to do it of their own volition through conversation, understanding, rather sort of the old school way is this is the way it's done and that's it.
Right.
One of the Mefarshim says that Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yan lohem manten be, the Rosh Hashem said to him that he was makir the sela, la sela hach v'yatzavayim. He said, there's two ways to lead. You can do it ala sela hach, and that sela is just a metaphor for that child standing in front of you saying, why should I do it? Right. So v'dibartem lahach ala sela. So
what Udi said before, I don't know if you heard, is the house is your laboratory. She always told the kids growing up that this is a safe place, meaning this is the laboratory, this is our space, and, we'll make mistakes, we talk about them. She really was remarkable with all the kids, really. She's just an amazing...
It affords you the time to grow and to become who you are before you need to be who you are, so...
What do you mean when you... Explain that.
Kids are kids, and they're going to experiment and try things and test you and test limits, and you have to afford them that right to do that. That's all kids do it, and some kids do it to a larger extent, some don't, but you have to work with them, allow them to be who they are, but fine tune them. And while they are in your home, you're fine-tuning them.
Yeah, and there's something that he told the kids all the time is that if you're going through something, if you're struggling with something, if you don't have to hide anything from us. You can always talk to us about anything. So the process that kids go through where they do find themselves, especially during adolescence, That's the goal, is to try to set it up that they can talk to you about anything so you can really guide them as they go, rather than, you know, if it's more authoritarian, that the kids just suppress it. You don't even know what they're thinking or what they're questioning, or you're not part of that journey. And it really, Uri was remarkable with the kids last night.
You're suggesting parenting more as as friendship necessarily than as an authority.
No,
figure?
Absolutely not. No. Okay. No, we're not friends. They don't want us to act like they're friends. They think we're weird when we're friends.
Okay.
It means that we're here to help you figure it out.
Right.
It means we're here to help you figure it out. We're safe people that you can talk to about your fears, about your concerns, about what you're going through at any specific time. We're not your friends. We're friendly. But the kids have enough friends. They don't need us. They need us as parents and role models.
So you're saying it's about trust then, building trust with your child.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the Gemara in Sukkah, and Daf Mem Vav, says, Loilema inchi liyanuka diavina leimidi v'layavid, don't tell your child something and don't do it. It breaks the sense of trust. You're saying I want to ask you a little bit of a more difficult question. We're in an unprecedented time where people are spending more time with their children than they ever imagined, and children are not going to school. An introverted and an extroverted child are having totally different experiences right now. Right. How would you tell a parent, and we all have, you know, there are those that are introverts, how would we deal differently with them during this trying time?
Want to go? I'll tell you. It's been like that all along. Nothing changed.
One thing. The extroverted kid had his friends. He was always out in the yard. He was always running to games with the kids. He was playing ball. And now he's stuck at home. And if he's doing it right, the social isolation, he's really suffering. Whereas the introvert, just give him another
one. Finding it easy.
Right?
Correct. That's a fair point. I mean, I think parents should try to let their children be themselves. And it's something I saw in our home growing up. My parents raised three sets of kids before blended families was cool, you know? Back, you know, 50 years ago, they had yours, mine, and ours. And they really raised us as individuals, and they never encouraged us to be carbon copies of each other. So I'm saying that nature, that extrovert and that introvert, they were like that before. And I think you try to give them space to be themselves.
Also, I think you have to encourage those, even the extrovert who is finding it difficult. You have to find that spot where she's, whether it's hobbies, you have to help her bring out, just the way you would have reversed it for the introvert at other times, you now have to do that for the extrovert and encourage her to be more of who she is in a safe way. I know we have a granddaughter who loves dancing. So she makes up dances now. She makes on Zoom. She's teaching it to her friends and she's teaching it to her cousins and she's doing it as a chesed, and you can contribute some money, and she's doing it to raise funds for Chai Lifeline. So, you know, and she's an extrovert
right.
At the highest level.
When Uri said that, that's exactly what I was saying.
So you just take what gifts that they have and you encourage those gifts. Every kid has things that make them who they are. You know, whether it's an introvert or an extrovert, you can encourage and push them along that path. Doesn't have to end and and it gets them through the day. It's amazing.
How would you deal with a child who's suffering from, who struggles with anxiety and the world is anxious and people are anxious? There's been a lot of death in the community, a lot of loss of parnassa. a lot of disruption to our daily lives, and you have that sensitive child who's really struggling with anxiety, and the parent doesn't know what to do. They're talking to the child, etc. What advice would you give the parent?
Well, the first thing I think that parents should do is get the kid some tools, you know, encourage the child to go for help. You know, most of the things that we might not have solutions to, that's what you go to a professional for. You don't go to a therapist when it's a five alarm fire. That's really a good time to go and have them learn coping skills. And look, everybody's anxious now. In fact, I tell you, with adult stuff, I find it very interesting that some of the people I've been speaking to have gone for the help for the first time, and they've been suffering with anxiety for a while. And I tell them, just go ahead. No one's going to look at you anyway. Just go, just tell the doctor, you know, that I'm feeling anxious. Now everybody gets it. Everybody's anxious, you know, in some way, it's interesting. I did a talk Sunday, a Zoom talk with a phenomenal anxiety specialist from Harvard University, a firm guy. And he actually said that some of the folks with anxiety are dealing with it, with all of this, a lot better because they have tools. They have the Kalem to be able to process it.
Now, it's a difficult time to get help. You know, you can't take the kid. If you were the parent and you had to deal with that anxiety and you had to deal with that child, could you give the parent some tips? Okay. So let me ask you another. Go ahead.
Rabbi Jonathan Schwartz, I did a series of talks. I did a series of Zoom talks last week with five experts in different capacities. And he was Dr. Jonathan Schwartz. He's a Rav in Hillside, New Jersey, and he runs an anxiety clinic. And it was interesting. He was saying that we get most anxious when we don't feel we're in control. And he was describing, he actually mentioned one of his clients is a public speaker who goes around the world lecturing, and he goes crazy on planes. He said, and he was relating that the guy said, he said, I can speak in front of 5,000 people and not bat an eyelash. But when I hear that door closing, you know, it freaks me out. So Rabbi Schwartz, he said that he encouraged him to get like an iPod for music, put three different tracks on it. You know, halacha, music, something else, whatever it is. It's just general education, and to play pick different selections. And when that door starts closing, you should take it out. And he said the research shows that when you have choices, it lowers your anxiety. If you can control one part, you can control other parts. And Uri, when it's so funny because I finished the talk, we did 9 o'clock at night. I came out. And she said right away, but cleaning.
Oh, yeah. That's why I revert to cleaning.
She said that right away.
Because I have control over it.
Well, no, when you get anxious. She said,
I think that's a great story. So the message is that anxiety is caused when we lose agency.
Right.
So, but if we can find something else in that situation over which we do have agency, it gives us the ability to control the fear that we have over what we don't.
It's a start.
Give the kid a music thing to play with, and let him choose which songs.
Yeah. Right. So I'm saying right. That was his idea, and it's funny because I came out and I told Diddy, I said, you know, you hope you listen to a half hour talk, you come along with two, three really good nuggets. So that was the first one that was
great nugget. That's for adults too. That's for all.
Absolutely. So I told it to her, and Uri said right away, don't you know? I start cleaning when stuff is not in order, and when she's getting a little anxious.
Or
I was just going to say painting. She's an artist, so painting gets her in her zone. Or she said right away cleaning. I told Dr. Schwartz, the Rav, when we were talking, when he said that, you know, it opened up a whole pathway in my mind.
Yeah.
Sorry?
I think it's brilliant. It's worth the whole half an hour just to hear this nugget.
That's it. You walk away with one nugget. Yeah, I'll send you a build of it. I'll pay Jonathan, pay Rabbi Jonathan. But one thing that was really fascinating that while we were talking, that I realized that one of the things that I kept hearing from parents in preparing for these talks, I've been calling parents and talking to them, friends of mine, just, you know, to get a list of questions together. And one of the things that virtually every person said, I said, tell me, what are you anxious about? Almost every single person said they don't know what's with the summer camp plans.
So let's talk about summer
camp. That's an open file.
Let's talk about that. How do we deal with, there's going to be a lot of change in our children's lives. There likely won't be summer camps, for likelihood. Put it this way, I'm not a prognosticator, but I would take a guess that they're likely not summer camps, right? They're not expecting a vaccine between now and the summer. I mean, unless they just open it up and they decide, look, a certain amount of people will sick and die, and let's just take that chance. And there is that possibility. You know, now they've discovered that children are getting a Kawasaki disease, Rahman al-San. So,
but he's going to stop cleaning. Hold
on. I'm saying kids are not going to be going to camp. A lot of girls are not going to be going to seminary, possibly.
Yep.
A lot of parents, boys are not going to be going to yeshiva, possibly. You know, travel. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But the yeshiva scenario is strong. We don't know whether they'll open. Kids are not going to be going to school, possibly. Girls and boys aren't dating. Well, let's talk about camp. How do you tell a child who has his heart set on going to camp? The whole year he's been talking about how he's going to take his go with his friends and his baseball, whatever his thing may be.
This is their outlet for the year.
How do you break it to them? You know, it's like as a parent, that's must be yes.
But he said she's let we're not empty nesting. It's our kids' problem.
But
we're going through this.
Everybody's going to have major disappointments, right? How do we? You're a mechanech. You've had to deliver bad news in your life, unfortunately. How do we deliver it in a way where it doesn't create a rebellion? It doesn't create a strike back and a rebound. The child does not become chas v'shalom a makalel, like we had in last week's parsha.
Right.
Klal Yisrael says, we have a way to deal with setback without becoming a makalel. How would you tell a parent to do that?
Look,
it's no different than anything else.
Go ahead and say
no.
Well, I think parents, especially younger parents who aren't used to this, just to get used to the notion that you're the leader of your family. You know, we don't think of ourselves. Look at it. We're both Baruch Hashem in the same, you know, more or less same situation in life. You know, we're not really comfortable with this whole grandparent thing. You know, like I'm the leader of this extended family, but that's where we are. That's the role we have. And I think, you know, look at what great leaders are in any society, in the battlefield, and in business, and in chinuch. I mean, I think you're honest, bracingly honest. You know, you could never, ever lie. Don't tell kids something's going to happen. By camp, it'll be over. I think that would be devastating. It would be worse. Speak to them honestly. Tell them that we'll get through it. And we're going to work on this together. You know,
you'll try to do certain things that normally you would go out of your comfort zone. We'll take a road trip. We'll, even if it's not what the parent normally would do, they'll just, you know, usually send them off to camp and have some time off for themselves. It's not meant to be at this time. And so you'll have to do some of the camping, like we have Camp Bizi, Camp Bobby Zaidi. So we take them on RV trips. We leave the parents at home. We take the kids. You could rent an RV, take the kids out for a few days. You're going to have to, as a parent, substitute what they're missing to some extent, that I feel. I assume parents are already doing that. You know, they're becoming teachers and playmates this is a long call. This is not a short game. So, you know, you have to keep reinventing the answers.
You know, we take our grandkids on an RV trip every year, usually the week of June, like the last week, but between school ending and camp starting. We've been doing it for about 6 years. And it's Gan Eden. I mean, you know, our muscles ache for 2 weeks afterwards, but it's just Gan Eden. It's amazing. We hope to, depending on how it works, we hope to do it again this year, if that's even possible. But I think, David, that it's a great opportunity to teach kids resilience.
Talk about that. That's important.
Yeah, and I was actually at a talk. I had a great conversation. I wrote a post on my social media as soon as this happened. I said,
Can I interrupt you, Rabbi Horowitz? Interrupt you,
Yankee.
I think that one of the things that this is a layman speaking, but I employ a lot of people. I teach a lot of people. In schools, we learn Bavli, we learn Nashim, Nezikim, Kachim. We learned in school, they learn all math, sciences. They don't teach you what do you do when you land on your face,
right?
Which is really going to happen. I mean, most projects fail.
Yeah, I'm saying, look,
most corporations do not survive, the majority, more than 50, do not survive year one in business, right? So the majority of projects, that's what, you know, Sheva Yipol will come, right? So right. It's not taught. How would you teach resilience and failure to a child?
So I've been studying this for a very long time because of the, you know, I deal with teens at risk and abuse survivors. You know, you look at a group of 10 people that had the same issue. Some of them, Rahman Laslan, just totally, they just fall apart. Some of them like limp along, and like one of them, a man or a woman, gets up, starts writing books, and is lecturing all, you know. So what's in the box? You know, it's something that's always interested me. And my mother happens to have been one of the most resilient people I ever met.
A survivor.
No, she wasn't an abuse survivor, and she wasn't a Holocaust survivor. She just was, she was like, she was never down for more than 5 minutes, you know?
Tell us the secret ingredient.
So there's a professor in Harvard now that I wrote about resiliency. But let me back it up a little bit. I think when 9/11 happened, we were talking about what we should be doing as parents. The kids were terrified, of course. We were terrified. And we said, one of the things we told each other is that we're modeling resiliency to kids. They're going to really, really watch what we do and how we respond to this. And it's okay to say you're afraid. So when I posted about this notion of resiliency, a woman posted, says, you must get in touch with my uncle. She left the link. I contacted him. He wrote two books on resiliency. And I've been working my way through it. He actually studied the in Japan. You know, they had a tsunami and a nuclear meltdown and an earthquake at the same time. Earthquake first, then tsunami. And then the nuclear meltdown. And he was studying which groups of people did better and rebuilt what they did, saved each other's lives. And he found that, I'm three quarters of the way through a fascinating book. He said that it was the social networks that people had. It was less than money. You would think the people who are wealthy have more, you know, have more resources. It was ultimately the people that had connection. They were the ones that did the best. And he talks about social networks and how they help each other at the moment and watch. But I think that it is something that everybody can teach by modeling this notion of resiliency.
Let's play it, Rabbi Horowitz from Yankee. Let's play it. I'm the child and you're the parent. And I come in and I say, I can't believe it. No camp. And I'm not going to see my friends. I am so, you're the pair. I'm so broken up. What do you now model? What do you say?
Go ahead.
You do the heavy lifting.
Heavy lifting. Thank you. What do you do? The first thing I would say is you empathize. You listen. You say, you know, any parent, by the way, look up empathetic listening. It really makes a difference.
Okay.
And as you listen, you validate, you say that must be incredibly frustrating. And you see people usually, when you say things like that, they usually calm down a little bit. And then you talk about it. And then you say, look, let's try to figure this out. Let's see. everybody does better when you give them options. We talk about anxiety. Throw back around some ideas of what we're going to do. And again, really
let
be
them
developed.
Be in the planning stages of everything.
I bring them in on the plan.
No, it's okay. It's important that they feel empowered because the power is taken away from them. So this empowerment, obviously, it's not going to be about being able to go to camp or going outside and playing with their friends. So they can have empowerment with other things. What they're going to make for supper that night. Every night, a different kid gets to choose. They could actually do it. They could be in the decision-making as to where you plan on making a trip or what you bring along or what games to play. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. On each level, as long as it's important to let the child know that they have control over X, Y, and Z. It's very important, I think, in giving them back some feeling that they lost control.
And I think, David, it's also a timing thing. Like, if a child comes home and expresses their frustration, you know, you gave an example, you were saying, like, you know, throws things around and, you know, goes a little crazy. That is not the time to talk to them about their reaction. You know, if you want to talk to them about, and they broke something, let's say you said, that was the thing you said, right? Like, what would you do if they came home and then smashed something or whatever it is? Timing is everything. Timing is everything. You want to get into a fight with your teenager? Say, sit down, there's something I want to talk to you about. How long is this going to take?
And may Shivan Badam Bishas Kasai. But as far as resilience, you're saying resilience is find something else at which you can be successful? Would that be, is that what you're suggesting for resilience?
That would be stress. I think resiliency is about talking about that we do get over our challenges eventually, that it's a process. Sometimes it's a painful process. And just be self-aware, and we'll talk about it every step of the way. I'm here to hold your hand. One of the studies, remember we were at the Covenant, were you at the Covenant dinner? The Covenant Foundation this year.
Yeah.
We were at a dinner for the Covenant Foundation, and a fellow got up. His name escapes me now. What a brilliant presentation. Yeah. Wasn't he great? And he said that he did a study that one of the things that builds resiliency most is grandparents. And he said, what?
Wow.
He said that when families talk about their family narrative for the last 100 years, you know, he says, you come to the Seder, he was talking about the Seder, you come to the Seder, you sit with parents, not necessarily Holocaust survivors, they lived through the Depression. I remember the time I only had one pair of socks and I had to wash them out myself, and made it. So he said that when this family continuity, and when the children, young children, are in the presence of grandparents or parents who talk about their parents, and it was fascinating. He did a very long study on it. And he said that narrative and the threads of that, you know, the threads that pull together, the bottom line is, even if you don't talk about it specifically, the children get the message that, you know, we get through things in our family. And so it's not only about their anxiety, that's a separate issue. It's the resilient gamze yavo. You know, you talk about it. Honestly, someone should go to Israel and study the people there. They're the most resilient people in the world. You go there, God forbid there's a terrorist attack. The next morning, the glass is gone, the business store's open. You know, they sing Hatikva.
Or as you're saying, that our family story, our narrative, transcends all these difficulties, bumps in the roads, deep disappointments, you know, serious setbacks, recessions, depressions, death, and we continue.
Right. And I think parents telling the children about it, and, you know, sometimes we feel that talking about our weaknesses make us weak. What? Makes us look weak. And I really encourage parents to talk about the times you struggled. I remember the first year I was teaching, I started as a kid, David.
But Bianchi, I think we're out of time.
We're out of time.
But I think two fabulous lessons. Anxiety is about losing agency. Find something else where you do have agency. And if you can dig into that, it'll take it away. And resilience, tell your children about your own struggles, your grandparents' struggles, the story narrative, and we've survived it. And who can do this better than Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael?
Right, absolutely. Our story, and our national story, is one of resilience, right?
Rabbi Horowitz, Rebbetzin Horowitz, thank you very much for your time.
It was a pleasure, David. Be well.
Thank you.